Welcome to This Is Money podcast, sponsored by Charles Stanley Direct. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Simon Lambert today is Lee Boyce. And coming up, the Trump slump. Why is the Donald rattling markets? Is it the end of the US bull market? What should you be doing to make your investments great again? Also today, how did the pension freedom class of 2015 fare? Was it all Lamborghinis and frivolity? We look over the past decade since the change. Nationwide hands out more cash to its members, promising more to come, and we have a very neighbourly clash over hedges. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.
But first, not even 2 months in the job, and President Trump has been busy unmaking friends and alienating people and whole continents. Trade wars picked with neighbours, overseas aid dismembered, government agencies gutted, the Green and DEI agenda canned, Ukraine betrayed, and pledges to reconquer the Panama Canal and occupy Greenland. The change and uncertainty has been dizzying. And we know that markets don't like uncertainty. Gone is the boundless optimism of Trump's election campaign that so buoyed investors. Simon Lee, welcome. Every week, something new, isn't it? Every day, something new. Simon, what is happening on the markets? Why are we talking about this today?
Well, there won't have been many people who had America goes to war with Canada on their 2025 bingo card, but that's what it looked like it was going to happen the other day when Trump reacted to Canada's reaction to his tariffs with some more tariffs and a sort of veiled threat to make it the 51st state. But what's going on markets? Well, what's going on markets is quite interesting because you say markets like certainty. They don't like uncertainty. And this is very true. And that has been the comment that has been widely made. However, Donald Trump is actually just doing all the things that he said he was going to do. So in theory, he's actually bringing certainty because he said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring in swingeing tariffs. I'm going to do that. And, you know, lo and behold, he's doing lots of those things, perhaps in a more extreme way than many expected. But you know, he would argue, I'm just doing what I told you I was going to do. And this is what America elected me to do. So get out of my way. I'm going to make America great again.
Right.
What's actually happening, though, is that I think, broadly speaking, if we take markets as that kind of catch-all term, markets, economists, analysts, forecasters, whatever you want to bucket all of this stuff as, people presumed that he wouldn't necessarily do all the things that he said he was going to do. They thought that Donald Trump 2.0 would be the same Donald Trump of 1.0, who mainly did a lot of this stuff by threat. He threatened to do these things, to twist some arms, to make people do what he wanted to do. There was a widespread view that the tariffs wouldn't come in, for example, or maybe just a bit of the tariffs would come in with the threat of more tariffs to come. And certainly he's using tariffs as a threat, but he's also using tariffs as actual, genuine, really quite big tariffs. And he has introduced those. I don't really think that we should get into the discussions around Ukraine and Gaza and Israel, because it's not a subject matter that I want to be talking about. I don't profess enough, you know, knowledge on any of those things to be talking about. But what I do know is that quite a lot of people have been really quite surprised and in many cases quite horrified by how he has gone about dealing with the situations that he said he was going to deal with and he was going to sort because no one else can sort them. To go back to the economic stuff, you would find it very difficult to find many economists, mainstream economists, who would tell you that tariffs are a good idea. They always end up being a losing game for both sides because you just end up in tit for tat trade wars. And generally speaking, the more barriers you put up to trade, the more artificial barriers particularly, which is what a tariff is. It's an artificial barrier that you put up to trade. Basically, it's a charge that someone has to pay to be bringing something into your country. And that's how it works. It makes the goods coming into your country more expensive. That's not how it actually physically works in action. But what it does is it just makes stuff from country A coming into country B much more expensive. So people in country B are less likely to buy stuff from country A. So then country A says, well, hang on a minute, this is unfair. We're going to impose the same tariffs on country B, because that means that otherwise they have an unfair advantage on us. But broadly speaking, the reason why people in country B are buying something from country A is because that's something that country A can do better, stroke cheaper than country B can. So country A then goes, well, there's no point us just putting tariffs on the same thing from country B, because actually, well, we can do that and we might do that anyway. But actually, that stuff from country B isn't that good anyway, and it's not that cheap anyway, and they don't have a competitive advantage. That's why they're buying our stuff. So what we'll do is we'll find some other stuff from country B and we'll put some tariffs on that instead. And then country B goes, right, hang on a minute. I was trying to gain the upper ground here, and now I don't appear to have gained the upper ground. So I'm going to find something else from country A that country A sells to us, and I'm going to put some tariffs on. And then country A goes, right, okay, we've had enough of this. We're going to put some tariffs on some other stuff from country B. You can see how this stuff doesn't work out that great in the end. This is what's going on between the EU and America at the moment is, for example, America's put the tariffs on steel and aluminium, right? To choose an example of stuff. And the EU is going, right, okay, now we need to find some stuff that we think is commensurate to that. But they're not just going to go, right, we're going to put tariffs on steel and aluminium from the US. They're going to put it on a load of other stuff. So, for example, bourbon is one of the answers to this conundrum, apparently. But to go back to the point of why markets are falling because they don't like this kind of stuff. Economists don't like this kind of stuff. But if you're Donald Trump, I suspect, and I don't know him personally, I suspect that you just go, I don't care. I don't care that almost every economist in the world says that my tactic is wrong, because I'm Donald Trump and I'm right and they're all wrong and they don't know anything. And they're exactly the problem that has led America to be in the terrible position it's in of being the world's largest economy and dominating the global stock market. And we need to do something about this, because just stuff is not going right enough for America. And so I'm going to make everybody else pay. And I will find myself an economist who tells me this is a good idea, and I will surround myself with people who tell me this is a good idea, even if everyone else says it's a bad idea, because all of those other people are completely wrong, and the people that I've chosen are completely right, and I'm completely right, and I will push ahead with this. The market is pushing back on that and saying, we don't agree with you, actually. And this is coming off the back of the, S&P 500, the US stock market, trading at record highs. It has had an almighty bull market, over the last decade. And the companies in there, some of the companies in there are priced for perfection. And there was talk about this, that basically, if the trade war did come in, those big US tech companies that dominate the S&P 500 would not benefit from this. And that actually, perhaps smaller and medium-sized American companies that benefited more from America's huge internalized economy would benefit from this. And lo and behold, the S&P 500 is down 8.4% over the past month. It's down 0.47% over the past 6 months. So it's broadly level with where it was, a few months ahead of when it started to look like, okay, Trump's definitely going to do this. And it's down 4.6% year to date. And it is still up, though, 8.4% over the past year. Compare that to the FTSE, though. This is what's interesting. The FTSE 100 is down 2.2% over the past month, because this is rattling all markets. But it's up 3.6% over 6 months. It's up 3.8% this year. And it's up 10.3% over the past year. So it is outperforming the S&P 500. And that is not something that has happened many times in recent years. And that's because investors are going, okay, maybe I take a bit of money off the table from the US and I'm going to put it somewhere else. And ironically, indices like the FTSE 100, some of the European stock markets are doing better, because they've got some of the companies that people are going, well, they might do quite well under this. For example, defense companies, lots more spending on defense in Europe.
I don't know why Rachel Reeves wanted to change the ISA system. Just wait for a slightly unhinged president to boost UK stocks. It's a weird anthropomorphism, I think, when we talk about the market. I find it all a bit as though it's a person that's making these moves and stuff. It's many people making decisions. But do you know, like when I think of sort of freakouts, I think of the obviously the mini budget, the famous mini budget, and you think, wow, compared to the announcements made in that, compared to what we've seen in the US in recent times, I'm surprised there hasn't been more change. Yes, you said that Trump is doing what he said. I don't think anybody would have predicted quite this speed, the way he's doing it. Lee, for the every man and woman in the streets of Southend or, I don't know, Leeds, what does it mean to us, all of this, apart from the fact that our newspapers are filled with Donald Trump? God, how you must love that.
Just rewind. That was a fantastic word, Georgie. I'm not sure you're going to cut through to the average man on the street in South End and Leeds using words like that. I
I
mean,
love
wow.
that word, though.
The thing is, I think it's pointed out three things. In fact, actually, four things to me, and I'm going to try and remember them
I was
as I
going to
go
say,
along.
never count,
Yeah,
Lee.
I'll count them. I could do it. I
Right,
could. So the
go.
first thing I was going to say is, investing is a long-term game, isn't it? Like we know this. You can kind of should have a minimum outlook of 5 years. Most people should, have an investment outlook that's far longer than that. And these little mini freakouts and things that happen, are par for the course, I think, of being an investor. I mean, it wasn't that long ago the DeepSeek chaos sort of came and went. I mean, that feels like it was like a fever dream. It was like a little blip. The DeepSeek Chinese AI system came out, markets wobbled, and then all of a sudden we stopped talking about it, like in a flash. And I know Donald Trump is not in a flash because he's going to be a US president for a long time, but a lot of what he's said and done, as Simon says, the things what he said he was going to do. If you look back a little bit further, the same as Simon, I was looking at where S&P 500 is at and FTSE 100. S&P 500 is up 106.5% over the last 5 years. The FTSE 100 is up almost 60% over the last 5 years. These wobbles come, they go. You got to just ride them out. And actually, there was a really good quote in a piece that was written in our sister paper from Susanna Streeter. And she said that investors should keep their eye on the long-term horizon and certainly not panic and withdraw money rapidly. Big bumps in the road are part of the investment journey. Yeah, totally right. There's no need to panic to keep doing what you're doing. And it is 25 years to the week, basically. We had the dot-com market crash. And there has been a lot of talk around. AI has sort of bumped up a lot of stock prices, especially of the Magnificent Seven. Is it all re history repeating itself? Very hard to say, and I'm not going to. I'm certainly not going to be making any predictions. But it brings me on to the second thing that I think this points out. It's just how much of an over-reliance there has been on the Magnificent Seven, and actually, so far this year, there's been more than £1 trillion wiped off collectively of those seven companies. I think Tesla are probably the one that we can hold up as the clearest example of that. They're down since 45% since the turn of the year. That's a massive fall. But Tesla shares are also up 25% over the past year. So there's that shock bit where you're like, wow, it's down 45%, but it's still up over the past year. It just shows you how booming these Magnificent Seven stocks are, which then leads me on to point three, which is diversification, right? Yeah, this is the thing. If you're an investor, if you're someone that is putting money, maybe you're drip feeding a monthly amount into a stocks and shares ISA, into a blended mix of equities. When was the last time you sort of lifted the bonnet up and had a look at where your money is at? Because the thing is, a lot of these kind of investment trusts and funds and all this, that, and the other, very, very heavily US focused. And is it diversified enough? Should you be looking at potentially some unloved, I would suggest, countries, areas that perhaps you need to be getting, point number four, equal weighting in? It's all about kind of not having all your eggs in one basket. We say that all of the time. So I think it's a clear shot to have a look at where you're invested in and where it's at. How heavily Magnificent Seven invested are you? You could just carry on in the same course and think, well, this is just another blip, and things will straighten out and iron out. There's always ups and downs. I think it's been going up so much and been nudging higher for so long that we've kind of latched onto a fall in the market. This was like, that's panic. But these things happen, Georgie, and it's all, I say, it's all par for the course of being an investor. You're right, though, going all the way back to when you said about Rachel Reeves, and there's rumours around the cash ISA limit being cut down to £4,000 is the latest on that development. I mean, things like this probably do not help the argument, because lots of people are nervous to invest and or do not want to invest huge amounts of money. And things like this kind of show why some people do panic, and don't want the kind of worry and fear of things like this happening, especially if you're just before retirement or something like
Well,
that.
quite,
Yeah,
yes, indeed.
that's why some people, I think, are keen to keep more money in their cash ISA than they are in the stocks and shares ISA. All depends obviously on your circumstances, but things like this shine a light on situations in which you can see why people. I'm thinking about, family members, older family members, parents, in-laws, who I know would be spooked by seeing their money going down 2-3% in a week. It would scare the life out of them. Yeah, and that's the thing, without realizing that potentially their money's grown 50% in 5 years. Because when the going is good, you kind of get used to it. And then when the going is bad, you're like, whoa,
The
that's my
panic.
money. That's my money. And it's, what do you mean the US stock market is falling? I've been told it's all going one way and that's it. And I think actually, to be honest, with Simon was just saying there about the mid caps and mid-sized American companies, I think the story of those companies has been so overshadowed by the Magnificent Seven. Almost the Magnificent Seven is like its own stock market in this, index. And it's kind of like there are lots of other good big American companies that you could have exposure to, and there are funds and ways of investing out there in which you can get money into America's 500 largest listed companies in an equal weighted way. So you've got exposure to all of those companies rather than overexposure to just a certain number. And that's what I've taken away. They're my four lessons, I would say, Georgie, from this week.
Simon Lee said people were thinking it's only going one way. Is this the end of the US bull market? Will the US go into recession? Should we be looking at closer to home or somewhere else? What should we be doing, as Jeff Prestridge has written about, to make our investments great again?
Yeah, so Jeff's laid out his battle plan for investors. Now, I think that the first point to make here is that betting against American exceptionalism and the American stock market has not paid off at all over the past decade. Broadly speaking, the best thing you could have done is back the US. And the easiest way to do that, and the way to spread your risk whilst doing that, has been to just buy a simple global tracker fund, right? Which tracks the whole world stock market, of which about 60% is the US stock market, because due to the success of the companies in it. And so, because that when those companies have succeeded, you've ended up holding them, particularly the larger companies, the Magnificent Seven, for example. And you've done very well off the back of it. Deciding that the US stock market was overvalued and that you were going to back cheaper markets like the UK, like Europe, like emerging markets, has not paid off. I mean, you will have still made a return, but your returns will be far behind the market. And if you look at the market in this context, it's basically the global stock market. The question is, are things about to turn? To which nobody knows the answer. It looks like they are right now. I mean, it looks like, this could happen. But maybe the market hasn't fallen as far as it could have done, especially when you consider how high it has been riding, because everyone's thinking, well, I mean, he's doing this now, which is much worse than we thought it was going to be, but he's just doing that to, come in with a bang, and then he'll ease back on it. Donald Trump doesn't like stock market falling. He puts a lot of, puts a lot of his faith in how the stock market looks, that kind of thing. So maybe the market's thinking he'll rein back, but what if he doesn't? Are you then overexposed? And you then start to overthink these things. So I would start from the position that the safest possible thing you can choose to do for your money is to invest all around the world and forget about all of this stuff, rather than trying to be clever and pick other investments. If, however, you do want to take a position on this, which means that you are willing to be wrong as well as potentially right, then there are other places that you can look to invest. And I would also consider whether you are overexposed to some of this stuff, because there are people out there who are overexposing themselves to the Magnificent Seven, to individual companies within there. We had a big article that Tanya did for us for our ISA investing channel, which if you come to thisismoney.co.uk/ISA-investing, you will find, and you'll find all of our ISA investing stuff. And in it, she looked at the major platforms that offer, funds, ETFs, investment trusts, shares. And I'm not going to run through all of them, but the overwhelming thing that came away from that is that most people are chucking their money into global funds, right? And global trackers, hugely popular, as we know. But within the lists of the most popular shares, there's a lot of, Nvidia, Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, MicroStrategy, even. I mean, that's a bet on Bitcoin coming through. And there's some big UK names as well. Now, Nvidia and Apple swap places as the world's largest companies, so you would expect them to be among the most bought shares. It does make a bit of a mockery of Rachel Reeves's idea. Sorry, not Rachel Reeves's idea. The idea that is being punted at Rachel Reeves by some people in the investment world that she needs to cut the cash ISA limit because that will buoy the UK stock market. It won't. It will just mean people put more money into S&P trackers and Nvidia. You've got these names in there, and then you think, well, hang on a minute. If people are just investing in Nvidia, rather than even investing in a global stock market tracker, then they are massively, overexposing themselves to the fortunes of that one company that has done unbelievably well. But, that price for perfection thing does start to come into play there. So, firstly, look, are you overexposing yourself? And then look, do you kind of want to underexpose yourself to this? Do you want to look at some of the places where people say stock markets are cheaper and there's a greater opportunity because it's easier to, for something to rise from a low price than it is for it to keep going up from a very, very high price. And some of the places like that are recommended are, for example, the UK stock market, emerging markets always get talked about. Europe gets talked about, Japan as well as the other one market that gets talked about. The other thing that you need to do is just be sensible about it, not panic, not be constantly looking at your portfolio. And Jeff has one final thought in his piece here, which he says, drip feeding money into investments on a monthly basis. This is the thing that really pays off over the years. It helps to smooth out the roller coaster ride that stock markets always involve, but means that you still profit from the gains that you can make from basically backing companies' ability to take money and do something useful with it and make a profit.
Thank you very much, Simon. Thank you very much to Jeff as well. I'm sure we will revisit this again, no doubt. But let me take you back. April 2015, Hillary Clinton announces that she will run for the Democratic nominee for US president again. Different days, eh? Elizabeth Holmes, you might know her, founder and CEO of Theranos, now incarcerated in a federal women's prison in Texas, is named Time's 100 Most Influential People. Oops. James Anderson, had to get that in there, becomes England's highest wicket taker, test wicket taker of all time. And pension freedoms came in. The new rules allowed retirees to take control of their pension savings, shifting away from the obligation to buy an annuity and moving towards flexible drawdown and investment options. It had as many fans as it had detractors. With flexibility and choice comes a heck of a lot of responsibility. So a decade on, how have the class of 2015 fared? Ed Monk, formerly of This Good Ship, This Is Money, now Associate Director at Fidelity International, has been looking at just this. And Lee, just remind us, pension freedoms, what are they? What were the debates around them? I remember talking about it on the pod all those many years ago.
Sorry, I did not have on my bingo card Hillary Clinton, the lady that was the Theranos founder, Jimmy Anderson,
Yep.
and what was the last one? All on my bingo card.
Pension freedoms.
The most important one. I did
Yeah.
not have that on my mix of bingo card Georgie today,
Yeah.
if I'm being honest.
I'm just keeping it fresh, Lee. Keeping it fresh. Keeping you educated.
Keeping it real. Pension freedoms. Yeah, we talked about this a lot. It was basically it came in April 2015, gave people over 55 more flexibility accessing their defined contribution pensions. Namely, the big one is that they take a 25% lump sum. It was obviously a very big personal finance news story of the time. We cannot forget an honorable mention here to Sir Steve Webb, who was on the show
Yes,
last week, and
indeed.
his line about the Lamborghinis that's just gone down in the annals of history. So that's where we were at. That's what happened. Now Ed is at Fidelity now, which they used to be at This Is Money. In fact, I think he might have been on the first ever episode of the This Is Money podcast, or definitely in the first few episodes. But we've got a kind of look back now, over the past decade, and what's gone on. So they've crunched the figures here, Fidelity, and they've said that basically retirees who have followed the 4% rule and withdrew that percentage annually from a pension pot worth £100,000 would now have £189,000 remaining. The reason why I did a bit of a dramatic pause there is that you kind of might have gone, "Eh, but how has that happened?" It's basically, so I should explain that that 4% rule is a long-standing principle that suggests the level of income is generally sustainable for 30 years or more. They've also remodeled it for 5%, 6%, 7%. The reason why I should also mention that is there was a separate story this week where there was a poll of financial advisors who are basically starting to recommend that that 4% rule might be a little bit out of date now, given the upcoming changes to pensions being a part of inheritance tax from 2027. It just shows that perhaps sometimes some of these things get so stuck and ingrained in our psyche that you've got to be a bit flexible sometimes depending on where the mood goes. But it shows you though, you can take a pension income and still grow your pot at the same time. And this is what this is kind of looking at. They also looked at the diversified portfolio of 60% shares, 40% shares. So that first one is based on 100% equities, which I would suggest a lot of retirees quite possibly wouldn't have 100% equities for reasons that we just were speaking about, and the kind of worry and fears over volatility. And a lot of people will have a kind of blended portfolio of shares and bonds. So they looked at it at 60% shares, 40% bonds. The lower returns, but a smoother ride is the way that they put it here. So with withdrawals at 4%, the amount that was left in the pot after 10 years, £157 and £892. So some interesting kind of data crunching going on here. I'm sure Simon has got some in-depth thoughts about it.
Simon, your in-depth thoughts, please.
My first thought is that this is largely responsible to people having done very well off the US stock market and the bull market that we were talking about at the top of the show. Basically, is lots of these people have invested their money, and if they have invested their money and skewed towards the global market, which many people will have done, then they will have done very well, basically. So you're looking at a period of time where being invested has paid off, basically. Now, the other thing I would say is that maybe I think the opposite of what people thought was going to happen has happened, and that people are not spending as much of their pension as they should do. If we go back to the, spend it on a Lamborghini line, gets credited to our Steve before he was our Steve, then I was always of the opinion that it was very unlikely that people who had saved into a pension for their working life and built up a good pension pot were then going to suddenly go and blow the lot. And actually, I think we possibly have the reverse problem, is that people, don't spend enough money on themselves. I think there's lots of retirees out there who should be spending more money on themselves. I think whether they have a final salary pension, which is not included within this, or whether they have a defined contribution pension, which is included within this, and therefore they have much more control over how much money they take out. I think that there are, there's a big chunk of the population who don't have enough. There's a big chunk of the population whose pension income is below where it needs to be, who don't hit that, comfortable level, who struggle to even hit the basic level of the Pension and Lifetime Savings Association standards. But I think there's also a big chunk of people who have more than that. And should be spending more money on themselves, and will, ultimately end up with an inheritance tax liability. And the thing I would say to those people, if they're listening to the podcast, the thing I would say to their children to try and get their parents to spend some of their money is spend it. Because everything you buy up to a certain point is 40% off. Because if you are going to end up with inheritance tax on your estate at the end of it, that means that that's going to have a 40% hit on everything that's above that threshold. So spend that money above that threshold because everything you buy is 40% off. Fly business class, go out to dinner and enjoy it because there's no 7-year rule on that stuff. If you give the money away, there's a 7-year rule on it. There's gifting limits, but there's no limit on how much you're allowed to spend on yourself. And I think this is where also we have a policy failure going on in this country. Without wanting to bang the drum too much on something that we bang the drum on, I think this is where we have an issue with tax. With the huge rise in higher rate taxpayers, the squeeze on people that we've done, the massive fiscal drag. We talked about this two podcasts ago. I talked about this in detail about the comparison between someone now and someone in 1997. If the higher rate tax threshold had risen with inflation since 1997, it would be £76,000 now. It's not, it's £50,000. That means that on that chunk of money between those two things, you're taking more than £5,000 extra a year off people, right? And that it means that not that if they had £5,000 a year more, they'd be richer, they'd just be level with the person in 1997. And if you keep doing this again and again and again, it starts to have a big effect. And we had some fresh figures out yesterday, basically revealing, an extra 680,000 higher rate taxpayers in the year to 2022. We've now hit 5 million of them. And I think that what's to go back to the policy failure thing is, and this goes back all the way back, to like the George Osborne Tories and everything. We've done it all the way through, is we've tried to just kind of hit people and hit them over the head with a hammer to get them to like spend some more money or do something, or we've tried to just tax them more. And all it ends up doing is it makes the people with the money hoard the money more. Like it basically, it's doing the opposite of what we want it to do. And I think it might be a good idea to try something different. Now, maybe the inheritance tax raid on pensions will actually achieve that and we'll see people actually, start to spend some more of those pensions or things like that. I've got a suspicion that it will just be another thing that backfires because it will make people feel squeezed who are in no way squeezed whatsoever and actually have plenty of money, and they'll do even more saving and less spending. And what we actually need is those people to do some more spending and less saving. So that's the call to arms. If you are one of the pension freedom generation who's now sitting on more money than you started with, and you're further into your pension years and you've got plenty, get out there, spend some money, get growth going so that we can stop constantly raising taxes because we're all bored of it.
That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Alex Webb-Bone of Charles Stanley Direct for our weekly Investing Explained feature. Alex, we've got what should be a straightforward question, but I think many people might not actually know the ins and outs of this stuff. I've built up £5,000 in my current account, and I want to put it into savings. What are the benefits of using an ISA over a normal account? I've never had an ISA before.
Hi, Simon. So, firstly, it's worth explaining that there are a few options when it comes to ISAs. The main ones are cash ISAs, stocks and shares ISAs, and lifetime ISAs, and each one suits a different savings goal. Generally, cash ISAs are for the shorter term savings and emergency funds, stocks and shares for investing over the medium to long term, and lifetime ISAs for property or retirement saving. So the first step would be to establish which one you think suits you best. They do, however, all share the same overarching benefit, which is tax-free growth. So, for a cash ISA, the interest you earn is tax-free. You won't pay any income tax on it. In a regular savings account, interest earned above your personal savings allowance is subject to income tax. And if you choose a stocks and shares ISA, any profits from investments are exempt from capital gains tax. You can also get flexible versions of these two ISAs. And this will allow you to withdraw and replace money within the same tax year without losing the tax-free status. So for example, at Charles Stanley, we have a flexible stocks and shares ISA. So if you were to take £5,000 out, you could put another £5,000 back in the same tax year without losing any of that allowance. Lifetime ISAs work in a similar way, but come with a bonus from the government. It's worth considering, though, that there are some strings attached to this. So definitely make yourself aware of these before you start contributing. For any more information, feel free to book a coaching call with us at Charles Stanley and we can talk you through it.
Alex, thank you very much.
Thank you, Simon.
Welcome back. Nationwide is handing out more money, £600 million of it, to its 12 million eligible members as a big thank you following its acquisition of Virgin Money last year. That is 50 quid each. And it's separate to its Fairer Share scheme, which will be announced in May, which means you could get even more cash. Lee, what's all this about?
Loads of money, mate. Here we go. Come on. Coining it in. Yeah. What is this all about? This is about Nationwide saying a big thank you to its members following its acquisition of Virgin Money last year. The Virgin Money acquisition was very controversial. There were some members that felt that there should have been a vote on whether the takeover should have happened. In the end, there was no vote. And Nationwide bought it for a couple of billion pounds. And essentially, Nationwide is saying that, you know, and argued, Debbie Crosbie, the chief executive, that this was a move to strengthen and improve Nationwide, which is, you know, Britain's biggest building society by some distance. I mean, let's go as far as saying, you know, it is a bank, really, even though it is a building society, the size of it. And how big it has become, you know, it makes it sort of bank size. But these payments are actually going to be going out to 12 million members, which is more than what we've had in the last couple of years with the Fairer Share, which, as you say, is a separate thing. These £50 payments will be made by May, it says, if you qualify for it. And crucially, it says to be eligible, you need to have made one transaction on your current account or savings account, or to have a balance of £100 in the current account, savings or mortgage in the last 12 months to the end of September 2024. And you must still have your accounts or mortgage at the time that the payment is made. Now, if you're potentially a joint customer, so for example, maybe you've got a mortgage in Nationwide under joint names, there's a chance that you're both going to get £50, which would make it £100. And as I said, these payouts should be coming pretty speedily. We've got Sir Trevor McDonald doing the advert. I mean, I haven't got him here personally to talk you to about it, but he's an advert at the moment with him with a big thank you. And he said in this piece, I was delighted to get the call from Nationwide to break this very special news to the nation. I love the look that you're giving me there, Georgie. Now, the next crucial thing and the question that people will be asking is, will there be a third year in a row of the Fairer Share scheme payment? That's a £100 payment that's gone on for the last 2 years. The reason for those payments, Nationwide has said in the past, is a strong group financial performance. And since it's been doing it, it's paid out more than £700 million to customers. It has 16 million existing members, but fewer than 4 million qualified for the Fairer Share scheme payout in 2024. We've had a few stories in recent months where we've been kind of trying to remind Nationwide customers to try and make sure that they've got £100 in a savings account or in a cash ISA or in the current account, and making at least a transaction to try and ensure that you are going to qualify for this payment. Because inevitably what happens in a scheme like this, and it will happen this time around, but probably to a lesser extent with this big thank you payment, but if there's another Fairer Share payment, is that you have people that have been Nationwide members for a very long time that for whatever reason, you know, didn't remember to do that, you know, legacy accounts that they don't use, felt a bit hard done by when they didn't get the payout. So we've been trying to remind people as frantically as we can to make sure. Again, if you're a joint account customer, you could potentially be getting £200 landing in your current account. We'll find out soon about that. I think they said it would be in May. I would have thought that the financial performance over the past year has been pretty strong and strengthened by the acquisition of Virgin Money. But you could equally say, well, the Virgin Money deal was very expensive for Nationwide, so for that reason, maybe it won't. Watch this space.
Well, yeah, we'll let you know when we know it. All right then. Read a question to consumer lawyer and regular columnist Dean Dunham on your website. A good old classic neighbourly row over hedges. And quite a short question, actually. Which, Lee, you like the shorter questions. I think you just don't like me going on, to be fair. It's fine. Anyway, my father, not my father, but someone else's, has a fence at the end of his garden. There's a new neighbour who lives on the other side who wants to remove the trees and hedges on her side, but which have given my father privacy for 20 years. What are his rights? This is interesting because this is exactly the same thing happened to me. I was rather surprised when all of a sudden I could see right into the end of the garden because they chopped down all the trees. Simon, shaking your head there?
I need to say no more than this. People, I never understand people when they do things like this. They don't realize, kind of the value that people put on their privacy. And we've had things like this before. And they think, oh, well, I want to take down this fence, or I want to take down that, or whatever. And they just like happily leave it completely open. But if you're the kind of person who has absolutely no problem with people being able to see into your garden, look at you all the time, there being nothing in the way, just having a simple wire fence perhaps sometimes happens, or you can see straight over the fence, you can just like look at your neighbor, oh, that's what they're doing, or whatever like that. Remember, you're in the minority, and your neighbor, statistically speaking, I actually have no actual statistics on this, but any statistics on it would just be made up. Your neighbor, anecdotally speaking, whatever you want to call it, won't feel the same. Almost certainly won't feel the same. Chances are you don't live next door to someone who likes to have their whole life on show. Actually, they probably like someone not being able to see in their window, see into their garden. They like the bit of privacy it gives them. So think very carefully before you do these things, and don't be a chainsaw Charlie. Don't be that person who just hacks it all back and cuts it down. Now, you might have a very good reason for taking down a hedge. It might block your light. It might be causing you a problem with your property. It might be, some other issue. But go talk to your neighbours about it. Go say, I'd like to take this down. These are the reasons why. This is what I want to do. How do you feel about it? Establish the dialogue. And then you can work out whether your neighbour is the kind of person who actually would like that hedge to be as high as possible, or actually, is perfectly happy to have no hedge out there whatsoever and be lying in the middle of their garden, stark naked for everyone to see, right? Ch chances are it's not the latter, right? So have the conversation, and then also think about, how you could mitigate it. And also remember that mature shrubs and trees take a really, really, really long time to become mature shrubs and trees. They take a very short amount of time to cut down, but whatever you replace them with is possibly going to take a very, very long time to create the same effect of privacy. So do that first. Don't be that person, right? The answer to this, Dean Dunham's answer is, the first step is for your father to speak to his new neighbour, explain his position, and ask nicely if they can reach a compromise. As I always say, do all you can to stay friendly with your neighbours. See, great minds think alike here. Me and Dean on the same page. If this approach does not work, your father will need to do some initial due diligence to establish the following three key points. Firstly, who actually owns the trees and hedges? If they're jointly owned by your father, his rights will be stronger and indeed clearer. And in these circumstances, it would be easier for him to stop his neighbour removing them. If your neighbour just owns them, then you've got an issue. Your neighbour could just chop them down. Secondly, are there any tree preservation orders in place? Some trees are protected under TPOs, which means they cannot be cut down or pruned without special permission from the local council. In my experience, this is me giving an answer. Do not just presume that they are protected. In most cases, they are not protected. And it can be very difficult to enforce this. So, do check up on it. Thirdly, are there any relevant local regulations in place? Different councils may have specific regulations regarding the tree cutting, so it's essential to check local laws. If your father does not find any assistance from these three points, his only other option is to turn to the law and to one that may help, known as the Prescription Act 1832. This law deals with what's known as acquisition of easements, such as rights of way or rights to light, but it does not specifically cover the right to privacy from trees. However, where a householder has enjoyed privacy from trees for more than 20 years, as is in your father's case, it is potentially possible to argue for a prescriptive easement related to the trees. However, please note this would be a novel and complex legal argument, and in these circumstances, I always advise using a specialist solicitor, to which I should add my own note, which is that people can spend unbelievable amounts of money on these kinds of arguments with their neighbour. And often, you know, the problem is that by the time they have these arguments, the tree or the hedge is already gone. And I would say that on the flip side of, you know, my be a good neighbor and think about what your neighbor thinks thing is also if your neighbor comes to you and says that tree that has got absolutely massive is blocking the light to my garden, would you consider having the tree pruned? Then do consider it. Don't just go, no, it's my tree, I'm not cutting it. Think about it. They're not asking you to cut it down. They're asking you to prune it. Same with hedges and things like that. Think about it. And maybe you could say to your neighbour, look, I don't really want to do it. It doesn't bother me. But I tell you what, if you pay half, I'll do it. Come to a reasonable agreement. Always try to be reasonable. Going back to the start of this podcast and what we were discussing about with Donald Trump and tariffs and all those other things, always try to be reasonable.
That is sensible advice there, Simon. The problem with all of this is chances are you won't know they want to chop the trees down until the trees are gone. Anyway, Simon, your stat of the week.
Right. My stat of the week is related to what we were talking about at the start of the show, but there was something that we didn't mention. We talked Tesla share price down 50%, you know, since the Trump election. We talked Tesla. Share price down 50%. We talked the S&P 500. We talked many other things. We talked the FTSE 100 even, but we didn't talk Bitcoin. Mm. Bitcoin. It was a one-way bet, wasn't it? Trump and the crypto bros, they were in thick as thieves. Bitcoin was going to the moon. It was going to smash its way through 100,000 and it was just going to keep on going. The price of one Bitcoin is currently $83,400 and it is down 11% this year, which just goes to show there's no such thing as a surefire bet when someone tells you there is a surefire bet. So always question what they tell you.
Very true, Simon. And that is it for this week. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Simon.
You can email us at podcast@thisismoney. Send us in your question. We will try to answer it. You can find us on social media, search for This Is Money, and you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all podcast past and join in the debate and read the comments.
If you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Take control of your finances with Charles Stanley Direct. Invest, save, coach, or plan. Using technology where it's helpful and people where it matters. Our website and app make trading cost-effective and flexible. But we're more than just an online investment service. We're here for you regardless of your financial needs or if your life takes an unexpected turn. Your finances, your way. Take control today with Charles Stanley Direct. Sign up now.
Investment involves risk.